ever imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light?
Total photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal with your host, Conan Neutron. Broadcasting from a secret underground lair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A gigantic middle finger to everything that is rock about music, rock and roll, and corporate power.
The thing is, though, if you don't laugh, you're going to go on a killing spree with sharpened nails.
Confidence of a hero or a fool, or looking back at a certain witch.
Could not be more professional.
It means something.
And they got away.
You know, that's my take on it. What's yours?
Protonic reversal!
That's like a science thing, right?
Indeed it is. The science thing is a science place. It is a scientific fact that we are all up in your face. It is time once again for the one, the only, Protonic Reversal. Welcome to it. A special episode with some returning guests coming up in just a minute here. Alexander and Danielle, they've both been on the show before, and I'm excited to see what they're up to. But before we do any of that, gotta mention a few things. Welcome to Conan Neutron's Protonic Reversal. I'm your host, Conan Neutron. I'm a rock and roll lifer that's been touring and recording for 26 years, most known for the band Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends. Music is a huge part of my life, and I use the format of this very long-running podcast to talk about music with musicians whose work I enjoy and respect, but who may not be household names. This is episode 463. Now, if this is your first time listening to the show, archives of it available for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding, protonicreversal.com. However, if you want to support the show and get episodes sooner, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal will achieve that goal. If you like the show or even just a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice, share it around the internet, even leave a review. All that helps people discover the show, beats back the almighty algorithmic overlords. This is a darn nice thing to do. So, Go Neutron Secret Friends West Coast Tour, end of August. Check neutronfriends.com for that. Catterball West, happening in Los Angeles immediately after that as well. Catterballwest.com. Love to see you out there. I'll try to bring some stickers this time for the show. But this isn't about me. This is about Alexander and Danielle. This is about Hackety Pachoto. Welcome back.
Hello.
It's been a bit. I realize it's been a couple years since we talked last, which is... seems like a couple weeks and like a couple decades at the same time, I guess, right?
True.
I was kind of shocked that you guys are not going to be nomadic now, at least for the time being, right?
For the time being, yeah. Nothing is permanent.
Yeah. And I mean, we still travel a lot, touring and stuff, like nonstop. Yeah. So the only difference really is that we have a place now where we have a bed and a sofa where we can relax and a studio in comparison before, but we're basically traveling all the time because of all kinds of projects.
Yeah. Watch out, you're going to accumulate a bunch of stuff now because you have a place to put it.
Yes.
Having a studio, though, is huge, especially for folks so creative as you. It's nice to be able to have the ability to capture something quicker, right? Without having to, germinate on it too long until maybe it gets overcooked or something along those lines. So that's a big change up as well. You are relentless with touring, compliment intended.
Thank you.
And, you know, I really admire that. And, what is this? The Odyssey is in theaters right now, which I saw and enjoyed. I like no one's films is fine. But it's, I feel like Hackety Pachoto's been on an Odyssey of your own, just like with everything, right?
Yep. And with 14 years, apparently, the original Odyssey was only 7 years or 9 years? So
two Odysseys.
We beat them.
Who would be the sirens in this situation, I wonder? Well,
anyway. Yeah.
Oh, we can't be tempted. We don't need to plug our ears. Don't worry about that.
Who would be the Circe? You know, you got to wonder. But Yeah. So you're in. So you're in Berlin, right? You're I mean, not to dox you. I'm just. I mean, that's. I've always felt from afar that Berlin is a pretty wonderful place to be creative, to do creative things. It's a fascinating city. You know, there's lots of artists. There's a good environment for doing art, as opposed to a lot of cities in the U.S., I would say.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we certainly didn't expect to be coming back to Berlin. That was actually the last place we were thinking of returning to, because originally we had started out to find another place, a better place, a cheaper place, a more artist-friendly place.
Let me know when you find it.
It's really hard to find.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's hard, right? Because I feel like every area with people, every major metropolitan area is kind of going through some of the similar challenges.
And absolutely. The only place we found that was kind of like what we had thought was in the most southern point of New Zealand.
Really?
It was like this amazing city, which is a mirrored Edinburgh, I think.
Yeah, it's the Gaelic name for Edinburgh is Dunedin.
Dunedin, yeah. And they were amazing because they have huge factory lofts and they're not expensive and there's artists everywhere and there's lots of music. And on top of that, they have penguins and what are those other animals called?
Sea lions,
because it's right on the coast.
Yeah.
So that was pretty amazing, but I mean, that's like the furthest most place you can go.
It's like the end of the world. Yeah, I mean,
exactly.
It's a very well, and that's yeah. Sea lions are amazing. Coming up, most of my life in the Bay Area, they're all around San Francisco, but penguins, never saw a penguin outside of a zoo or a museum or something along those lines. So that's it. And New Zealand is kind of its own biome. It's its own ecosystem.
It's amazing.
All aspects.
Yeah, we saw whales there. That was pretty amazing too. But it was just too far away.
Because if you settle there, right? If you settle there, you're so far from everything.
Yeah,
and it's you're in this awesome little alternate universe wonderland, to a certain degree. But it's for folks such as yourself that.
And then times are changing. When we were there, that was in 2018. Apparently. It's the prices are really rising in New Zealand also, and New
Zealand. They have a new president too, right?
Yeah, and New Zealand people migrate to Australia, and they're not very popular for that reason, and all of that.
Yeah, I feel like Australians have a tendency to want to bully New Zealand folks, which is very Australian of them to do so. But peace and love.
They do it politely, though.
Yeah. Well, in the way that, I live in Wisconsin now, but I'm from California. And what I always used to say is, like, nobody can beat up on Nevada except for California. it's like that's your little brother or something, right? It's like, oh, well, it's okay for me to give them grief, but you can't. How dare you?
But Nevada's supposed to be beautiful.
It's great. It's beautiful. It's more culturally that they get beat up on, and sometimes for good reasons, which is just that there's some get off my land ridiculousness that comes out of Nevada now and again. It is gorgeous. It's actually an underrated state, I feel like. But
it's one of the big sky states, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's
one of the five.
You have a and when people think of it, they only think of Las Vegas, which of course is its own thing entirely. But, there's a lot of really, really wonderful, unless you hate that. If you hate desert, then okay, it's not for you. But
I love desert. It's my favorite,
me too.
Most favorite kind of landscape. I love it.
Yeah. I've even driven they call it the loneliest highway in the U.S. It's I forget the number, but it's like between the major highways. And I've driven it twice. And both times I saw one car. And we're talking about like a 5-hour drive.
I love that. I love driving on highways where there's nobody. Ugh,
yeah,
just love it.
Yeah, no, it's an experience. I definitely would recommend for a certain type of person. And I think you two would be fine. But some people would be like, that sounds like a nightmare. I'm like, oh, godsend. Are you kidding me? There was no people. It was great.
Yeah,
it's
when we were in Joshua Tree. That's where we recorded our first album.
That's right.
We would drive through the park like really, really slowly and listen to Earth and Om really, really loudly, and it was heaven. It was heaven.
It feels simultaneously so of the Earth, but also like another planet. to. Like, it just feels so unique and interesting. I love that vista so much.
And I feel like... I had this great experience when we were recording there. I would step outside of the studio when the sun was going down. Yeah. And suddenly I felt like, this is strange. Has somebody dropped a bottle of aftershave on the doormat here or something? What's that? It's intense smell, for one thing. And then I realized that it was just the smell of the desert, you know, like, right. It was so fragrant, so beautiful. And then I had another very stupid kind of instinctive reaction. I grabbed my back pocket and I tried to take thinking I could take a picture of it. But yeah. It was an experience that you cannot photograph on your mobile phone, you know. So that was stupid and weird.
But it's evocative in a way, because something that fires up our senses, sometimes you're not thinking about the fact that you're going to get this real small piece of the puzzle if you take a picture. Even if it's the best picture in the world, it's still going to be a small piece. But I have a friend specifically with Joshua Tree. He actually did the pictures that are on my last record. But he's taken so many. He's an incredible photographer and takes these amazing, especially time lapse photos at night and things along those lines of Joshua Tree, and they're so wonderful. But it's also like, yeah, but it's about 40% of actually seeing it. Like, if you actually are there and seeing it, you get the full sensory experience, and that's something that it's interesting that art as a microcosm for that can elevate us to different places and is a different experience, but informed from.
Sorry.
These type of sensory inputs. And I don't think about this often because I don't sit around getting high. But that said, I do think that it's important. I think it's something that maybe we don't talk about a lot with any of the arts, but especially with music, the transformative aspect of it.
I think it's important to get high, but now that it's legal in many places there, I don't have to do it anymore. So it's good that other people get high.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to be clear, I got nothing against it. It's just not my thing, right? I'm all for it. Legalize it. Great art has been made while people were high. Great art has been made by people that are not high. that's my official political statement on it. So going back to Berlin, you got a new album, first of all. We should mention there's new, 12 minutes in. I haven't even talked about this album, man. I'm sorry. Lichtung? Is that?
Lichtung, yep.
Yeah. Tell me about this record, because you guys have had a very interesting run of records, just exploring different aspects of things, you know, utilizing the different studios to bring out different aspects of the music, so on and so on. Tell me about this one. What makes this one different from the rest of them? Or is it?
Well, the album was recorded in the room that we're sitting in right now, and so it was very much informed by the fact that we are feeling a little bit more at rest than we did when we were constantly traveling, and it was informed by the fact that this part of Berlin, in the outskirts of Berlin, it's called Lichtenrade, which means to cut a clearing into the forest. And therefore the title of the album, Lichtung, which is the clearing.
And Licht in German is light.
It's light.
Right, yeah. Ich habe 3 Jahre nach der Oberschule.
Ah, okay.
Ich spreche Deutsch nicht so.
Oh. Wow, I'm impressed.
Beeindruckend.
Yeah, I know all the best swear words, which I will refrain from just announcing. But I don't have a... let's put it this way. I've read a couple books in the original German. But whenever I'm in conversations with people that have been there for an extended period of time, or especially our natives, I'm out of my element. Ordering at a restaurant, I'm okay. Sehr gut, sehr gut. Wunderbar.
But in any case, our album, we always do, I don't know how other people do it, but with us, we always do an album. We start recording an album if we have the urge to experiment with something, like either be at the place that we're at, you know, like the other places where we were, because they were weird places and they had weird vibes and we kind of wanted to do something with that. Or we have specific themes or we have specific musical ideas. And that's kind of what kicks us off to do another album. And this time there were a lot of things that kind of really made us want to do something new. I mean, for one, the language part, being back in Germany, I thought I really want to do something completely in German as a tip of the hat to the country I've been in for such a long time, and to kind of say, okay, well, if I'm moving back here, which I didn't really expect, and then I want to do at least one album where that they can really understand, because it really does make a difference if you're singing in the language of the country. So that was one big thing. Then the other thing was also
choppers,
helicopters.
Oh man.
The other thing was that we kind of were listening to, I mean, we, you know, we tour a lot, we play our music a lot, and we were thinking it'd be nice to play, to record something that's kind of mid-tempo, because the last albums were all pretty fast.
And for you guys, for sure. Yes,
And we felt that somehow if you play fast songs, it's really fun, but it's not very, somehow it's not something that, you know, you can like kind of have an interaction with the audience and kind of, I don't know, it's like, it's more personal singing slowly. And so we thought maybe we should just add a couple of slow songs to our repertoire when we're performing to make it more intimate, you know.
The vibe, as the kids say, you know, the vibe can be easier to establish that. No, and that's noteworthy too. And you guys are at such a, you know, have such a great back catalog of songs and stuff that you can pull from, that it's great to be able to look back and be like, hey, why don't we do some of these kinds of songs, and that will be benefit in this way. I think it works really well. I mean, this like the whole record, even like with the record cover, right, which reminds me of, I don't know, like 60s folk records or something along those lines, except for the fact that you've got the like the Ouroboros of the other circle within the circle and within the circle, and like almost a dimensional recursion going on here, which is sort of like, oh, that's not something I've never seen that on any of those 60s style record covers, but it's immediately recognizable as that art form for record covers, but with something different. There's something different about it, that's something a little stranger, kind of weirder, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like that's very fitting with the music, because
I mean, that's another thing too, that we kind of thought we want to Are you okay? We both had really bad colds. So
I was going to say, hope this...
Alex is, like, coughing.
I was going to say, hope he's not allergic to me opining about record covers.
No. We've had a bad cold. There's been around in Berlin. So the other thing was also that we said, you know, we've been doing a lot of drone. And we thought, when you're playing drone all the time, at least for us, we kind of thought it'd be nice to do something which isn't quite as repetitive all the time. I mean, we really like doing it and we enjoy it, and we, you know, it's not as if we're against it, but we thought just to kind of like widen our, I don't know, repertoire, we'd like to do some things that are, that have a little bit of an unusual song structure, you know, like not only repetitive, because that's fun to play live. I mean, we think a lot about the live aspect to things because we perform so often.
It's a huge part of your life. Of course it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully you do. I wish most bands thought a little more about it, frankly. You know, it's like
we love it. I mean, you know, that's where we have the most fun, actually. So that was another thing, that we wanted to change the structure, and we wanted to bring in some more electronics to make it more contemporary, too, because we were thinking... Somehow, I don't know, things are moving so fast in the world at the moment with AI and all those things that are happening. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. I mean, not that we think AI is good, but it's, you know, all this technological stuff and electronic stuff in the world is part of our life. And we thought it'd be nice to kind of like kind of add that into our music, too, just for the fun of it. And on top of that, I felt like playing piano again. So of those things together came up, and we were like, okay, let's see what's going to happen. And we were a little nervous because we didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah, and another thing also was that usually when we, or in the past when we were traveling, we still have to be very effective and very, ecological with our time management mostly. But in the olden days, if you will, that was like 10 days of writing, 10 days of recording, and 10 days of mixing. That was pretty much every Hakete Picciotto album so far. And this time around, we were able to spend a little more time. And also, what was a nice thing about it, we financed the production with a Indiegogo campaign.
That's right, yeah.
And therefore, we had the chance to really think about how we can make it accessible to people in order to get them to support us in doing this. So that was also like an important aspect to me.
Right, and the crowdfunding aspect gives you... So there's different stakes because, of course, these are people that are... I personally feel like it's a little bit of a different exchange when it's not somebody just buying a record that's already made. It's like someone involved in the creative process that is...
Absolutely.
They're putting their faith in you.
Yeah.
To absolutely.
Come up with something cool, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So how did that change the process for you at all for putting it together? Like with that, was a different thought process involved?
Well, you have that group of people in mind. While you're working, it's
yeah.
not like the production is not kind of open-ended, like you made a certain promise and you, there's a certain goal that you have to reach. And at the same time, you have to make your supporters, keep them happy in a way.
Right.
And just having that in the back of your head that there's a group of people out there that needs to be informed and entertained and and reassured that we're not flunking out that really does something,
that you're making something worthwhile, that you're
yeah.
you're making the thing that you want to make, but also there's absolutely an audience in mind in this case, right? Like, and it's there are people that are not just put their investment of time and attention and energy, but like literal money on the line to help you do it. So you
exactly.
exactly. Which maybe that's not something billionaires think about that often, but if you're a working artist, it's on your mind, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And it also reminds you that really everything is a collective or a communal effort. You don't do anything on your own. Everything you do
yeah.
is sort of... informed and supported and by the people in your time or in your era.
Yeah, and I think that's so did you find that and with those resources, was there another part of the record creation process that you feel like you were able to spend more time at or approach differently for recording? And an instance I always use is for me, like for years, I would rush through mixing. It's just like, okay, that's done. That's done. That sounds good. You can hear everything. Sounds good. And then it's like the idea of, oh, you can get a different feel if you mix it this way. If you bring this up, it brings out this aspect of the song and so on and so on. So I'm speaking of like things like that.
Now, mixing is really, really important for us because we have so many opposing forces in our music.
Right.
Like the small little melodies, the old instruments, the loud walls of sound. And so we've been working with Victor van Vugt for a couple of years, who's an amazing producer. I mean, he's worked with Nick Cave. He's produced PJ Harvey. He's, really done a lot of really great stuff. And he really is an amazing, amazing mixing magician. I mean, I don't know how he does it, but he manages. And no
yeah.
other technician that we've worked with before has managed that with our music, because... I play violin and like little old instruments that do not have that power that an electric bass does, or the percussion or the drums. And the first thing he always says is, okay, let's give every instrument room and space, and then it can mm. like it can actually sound large if it's a tiny little thing within a wall of noise. And I think that's one of the most the signature thing of our sound is his mixing. And that was one of the most important things that we needed the money for to be able to pay him, because he's good. He's really good.
Yeah, and in the composition, the recorded composition is going to change so much just dependent upon those kinds of things, right? And to the point that it's almost a different song, or you'll lose maybe certain aspects that make it special. So you need someone that's going to give it care and attention, and you'd like to most people
he makes
that,
it shine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then, I mean, I don't think we could work with a producer per se who would tell us what to do or any such thing, because we're both pretty stubborn and we both know pretty much exactly what we would like to hear. But that's the thing. Like when we record, I engineer everything and we do it on our own. It's just the two of us, and that process is very intense. And it would, we tried that. I think Perseverancia, we mixed ourselves. The first album, and also Mineteca. We mixed Perseverancia and Mineteca.
It was a nightmare.
And that it truly is, you know, like and we love
you go crazy, you know,
we love each other, but that is a nightmare.
Because if your room isn't, you know, if you don't have
say less. I get it.
Yeah. If the room isn't.
You know, like we never worked. You know, we never work in proper recording studios as such. So our rooms are always special and difficult, for that matter. You know,
and for mixing, terrible.
And for mixing, you know, it's great to have like a proper mixing setup and like a proper engineer who just concentrates on that and, you know, and puts the things together.
Yeah, and that the room is, what is that called? If you have a room that's
there is there's a word
acoustically
for
that, designed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like we had one room where we were mixing an album and I was on the sofa, and at one point I realized that if you stood up, the bass sounded completely different than if you sat down. And it was just like, you know, it's like you go to the different parts of the room, you're like, so what is the real sound now? Is it like if I'm standing in the right side of the room, or if I'm sitting on the sofa, or if I'm sitting on the floor? It sounds so different. It kind of drives you nuts.
And every set of headphones sounds different too.
Right. And it's like, well, which one is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
and you hit on something so important too, which is that, and this is something I feel like that's lost in the conversation of the, oh, well, everyone can just record at home now. It's like, well, sure, but I mean, there's a reason why recording studios exist, which is to say that these kinds of problems, if you have a room designed for recording and you don't, there's an entirely different set of challenges that are just going to be coming in out of nowhere that you
Absolutely.
Have to solve for.
Yeah.
And that have nothing to do with like the writing process, the recording process is entirely different, right? It's like, this is, and it's,
like the other day, you were working with an artist here, and he said, "What's that hum?" Remember?
Yeah. I was the other day. I was producing a sound artist, Jakob Kierkegaard, a Danish sound artist who does like field recordings and stuff like that. And he detected resonance in this room that I never heard before, because we were working with music, you know, and it's like it's like an actual pitch, you know, but I never heard it because I was working with music. But he only works with like field recordings, so like the clear, pure sound that doesn't have any resonance to it, you know, or if there's a resonance to it, you know, like
it's crickets,
you know,
or something.
He notices it. And, and you know, and of course, ever since he pointed it out, it's all I hear.
It's like,
you know, I can hum it for you, you know?
Like, right. You can't unring a bell in that way, right? Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's interesting that it would be someone to, of course, it makes sense, someone like that, where it's like, the most infinitesimal anything is going to cause alarm, because it's like, that's not the thing. There's this other thing that's happening. Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Sorry. So that's how we basically do our album always. We record it somewhere crazy, wherever, you know, and then we go to Victor and he cleans it all up and he makes it sound gorgeous. And usually he's so good that we have a mastering engineer who's really dear to our heart too, and he's really great. He worked a lot with Sleaford Mods and stuff.
That's right.
Usually says, what do you want me to do with this? It's already, it's mastered. There's nothing
it's there,
you know,
in the mix,
left
yeah.
to do. Because Victor is just so good at putting that whole, you know, balance into it.
Yeah.
So that's basically what we do with every album. That's the only luxury we basically afford, you know. I mean, even though he's not that expensive, but still, it's the only luxury we have that we say, okay, we only do it with Victor because he loves our music and he understands it.
Well, and there's something to be said for somebody like that understanding the vision, right? Which, and I agree. I don't know, you know, having an outside person produce you guys, so to speak. I don't know if that would make sense because it's you have such clear and articulate ideas that it's like, well, that's not a problem. You just need to capture a well. That's all you need to do. And then the nice thing I feel like about having a mixing engineer that's outside of the creative bubble for the writing and recording process, then you get someone with outside ears. They can hear it. And, oh, if I EQ this a certain way, then that will, you know, come out better. And I'll take this down a little bit, and that'll allow more room in the stereo field and what have you.
Yes, and it allows us to take a step back. You know, like while we're recording it, we're like right in there, hands on, and we never really get to see the entire picture. And as soon as Victor is taking care of that, we get to take a step back, like you would take a step back from a canvas, you know. And you know, before you were working on the details, and then you step back, and then you see the entire picture. You know, like the whole triptychon of the stereo.
Well, certainly. And that's, and I think that you, I mean, the thing about you two is you know exactly who you are and what you're trying to do. And that should be something that maybe most artists are, but some people it's like, what are you doing? What is that? Do you not know what this is? Cause I could tell you if you want, but like, you have a built world that's inviting to people if they're wanting to take that ride, if they're wanting to come into your world. And for that kind of situation, you're able to look at things more granularly. I mean, I like the fact that it's all you know, auf Deutsch for the lyrics. And because there's certain things you can do. I've read Baron Munchausen in German and English, right? And it's like, it's very different. It's very different.
It is.
And there's certain things you just can't get across because there's that language barrier. So is there anything... was there anything with this record that, like, you're like, oh, that's cool, we can express that in that way, and that comes across maybe in a way that wouldn't come if it was, like, an English lyric or something along those lines?
Huh, that's an interesting question. Nobody's actually asked us that. I don't know. I mean, it's just so different. For me, I mean, I speak fluent German because my mother was German. My first language is English, but then German. And so I don't have a problem with not being able to speak it fluently, but still English, because I grew up in the US, is more natural to me. So if I write, I instinctively write in English, and it's very, it just has the flow. I can do it really, really easily. With German, writing in German, I also usually read in English. I don't really like reading in German for some reason. I don't know why. I've tried it lately a little bit. Some things are okay if they're German books, but in general, I just feel more comfortable reading in English. And it was more kind of abstract. So I thought that was interesting. You know, it was kind of like an abstract experiment. And writing in a different language always has completely different, I don't know, connotations. Like German is such an old language. It has a different rhythm. Because it's so old, the words have a lot of anchors in different periods. So if you use a word, people will say, oh, you're back in the time of Brahms, or, oh, now you're speaking of Goethe, only because you use a certain word, which still get used today, but because it's so old, it gets connected. So I didn't realize that when I started out. And I'm actually only realizing now, after all the interviews we've done with journalists, is at how much they actually look at every single word and what it's actually connected with what time period, you know. So it was kind of like more of an abstract experience, which was really interesting to kind of learn things about the language that I have been speaking for a long time. But I have to say, I do enjoy doing it, but I feel more at ease if I'm writing in English. So it's I feel a little nervous if I'm writing in German. Let's put it that way.
Sure. Well, I mean, yeah, and part of it being that there is such a rich history of it, right? And
yeah,
but interpretations can be interesting as well, because if you look at, I mean, look at like Lynch's interpretation of The Wizard of Oz. You know what I mean? Where it's just this crazy, unique thing that brought out certain elements that, you know, I go back and like watch the actual Wizard of Oz. I'm like, oh, okay, I see what he saw in yeah. these elements that like sparked. So that so the recontextualization of coming at things from a different way without having that frame of reference for that historical context and like, you know, which the associations with certain words and phrases and conjunctions and whatnot, I think that can be make something kind of cool.
I can give you a good example. Like the second song on the album is called mm-hmm. Vogelfrei, which would be the literary translation would be free as a bird.
The literal translation
yeah. would be free as a bird. Vogelfrei, free bird, you know, or bird free. But this is a word that was coined in during the time of the 30-year war. And basically, somebody who is vogelfrei, he's not free as a bird. It means that if that person dies, he is a pariah. He's an untouchable.
He gets eaten by the birds.
He gets eaten by the birds. He's free for the birds to pick at. That's what the word
is. And I didn't know it. I didn't know that. And that's what I mean with, like, you know, I've been speaking this language for ever since I've been in Germany, which is a long time.
Yeah.
But those kind of deeper, you know, meanings to every single word in this language is something that I didn't know. And so when I wrote that, Alex said, you do know that that means basically being an outlaw outside of all, you know, all conventions and not necessarily positive. And I was like, okay, interesting, because that's kind of what I want to say, but I didn't know that it's that what it that's what it's meant. So I kind of felt like, you know, I was walking on eggs all the time. It kind of, because of that, became almost a little bit more political, you know, because
right.
all these different time periods have a certain political connotation. Like, for instance, the song Zeitenwende on mm-hmm. the album. That word is a very, very old word for change of the times. But the former chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz, used it to mark the time of the beginning of the Russian war. So basically that word now stands for that year when the Russian war started.
Yeah, it's okay. charged and tainted
it's
with
really
some
charged with
sure.
meaning.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I didn't want to use it that way because I really like the word. I think it's a beautiful word. It's like the change of the times and times are changing, you know, so how else are you going to say that except like that? But immediately you get questioned by all Germans. So are you quoting the chancellor? And I was like, no, actually, no.
Right, right. Yeah.
Well, it makes you also think about the state of the world in the sense that German is an old world language.
Absolutely.
So it means that it has not. Of course, it has developed over the past centuries, but it has not developed in the way that English has developed as a new world language that is kind of utilized for aviation. Pilots all over the world and ground personnel speak in English to each other. And you know, it's so English is this kind of it's a
contemporary.
It's a utility language in many ways.
Right.
Yeah. Many ways.
Yeah.
So it's very different. It's not, you know, it's sort of a lot freer that way, but also it gets
easier, I think. I mean, I really think it's easier. I just like it started getting me really nervous, thinking, "Oh my God, am I going to get like told that this word is from?"
It's a lot safer.
No.
It's a lot safer.
Fraud. Yeah, it's like more of a fraud enterprise.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's like you're calling something Schweinhund or something along those lines. But you know, it's yeah. Especially when it's your art, you don't want it to accidentally represent something that it's going to distract from everything else, and then suddenly that's the only thing that anyone's talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting experiment.
Well, and yeah, and again, I only have the one story to go back on, but the Baron Munchausen, it was wildly different when I read it in German, which, by the way, took me like four times as long as reading in English, but it was a rewarding experience because of the nuances of the language, of which, you know, whatever, I'm not a native speaker, barely can put together like seven or eight phrases, but the whole it loses something in translation. Adage, like, oh, I really understand that is 100% something that loses something in translation. So, but it's a good challenge as a writer to do something like that, right?
It is, and it's really interesting because you kind of, you know, you somehow start thinking of why that is, like how different languages and different cultures express things differently. Like, I also started thinking about all kinds of stuff. It really kind of like, I started thinking about politeness, how different politeness works in different cultures. Like the Germans are known not to be very polite. The English are known to be very polite.
There's a brusqueness to it. Yeah, I mean, in Japan, it's like, you know, it is a culture of respect, right? Yeah,
exactly. The French, I mean, we're doing a piece of theater in Paris at the moment, and the French are unbelievably polite in the way they speak to you. Yeah. They're basically telling you you are just amazing all the time. It's really nice.
yeah, we all need that a little sometimes, right?
Yeah. So like all these different languages and the way they express certain things really kind of also explains why there's difficulties amongst cultures, only because of the language, because people express things differently, feel things differently, you know. And you can say something which is very polite in one language, it could be super impolite in another language. Mm-hmm. So all that whole language theme became this thing that I got really interested in through this album. I could talk about it for hours. I'm not going to.
Yeah, well, the good news is it's a long form show, but I get it. There's only so much before you start repeating yourself. But in terms of that, though, it is almost it's an understanding that you're not going to repeat yourself writing wise because you're engaging with it in an entirely different way. Like, so the unfamiliarity of the framework of using this different language is going to make you think about things, the construction of sentences even, let alone like something that's fitting with the music differently, which I think is fascinating. I've never tried it, but I mean, that sounds...
It is.
I think about, when you have... like chanteuses that would translate songs into different languages, and you would get different aspects of it that would come off as very profound in some ways, and then the parts that like would really kill, so to speak, in English, well, it's like, doesn't work.
The challenge can be inspiring. I mean, Samuel Beckett started writing in French, which
Did
was
really?
Not his mother tongue. He wrote all his books and all his plays in French.
Oh, wow.
You know, and he started writing when he was like almost 40 years old, so before he was like James Joyce's secretary. So the challenge of working in a different language can be very inspirational.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy. I didn't expect any of that when I started. I just thought I'd be polite.
Right,
sing in the language of the country that I've moved back to. I didn't think of the whole thing that it would entail, but it really was fascinating.
Yeah, and us, German teenage rock musicians, when I started out, when I was a kid, we had to write songs in English. And some of the songs that I wrote when I was, 13, 14, the English is like, it's ridiculous. It's so bad, it's almost good.
Yeah. The first, the Totenhosen was probably like the first German band that I heard. And I was sort of like, so wait a second, something's different about this. What is this? And they're like, oh, they're German. I'm like, oh, okay. Now that makes more sense. All right. And so on that, this is also the first post Neubauten record for you.
Correct.
Right? I mean, that's a big change, and that's can you tell me what led to that decision and how that all went?
Well, you were saying this is a long form show.
He's very long form. Yes. Take as long as you need, my friend. Yeah.
But I can only say to that, don't get me started. But I can tell you that I feel very liberated, and yeah. And there's a great future ahead. The stuff that Danielle and I are doing makes me very happy, and. And I intend to be happy as long as I live. And that is the big change, basically.
That's fair. That's fair.
If you catch my drift.
I get what you're throwing down, too. I'm going to see your ensemble compatriot, Dwayne, on this Tuesday, coming up with the great band Tomahawk. We're playing with Melvins, actually, so...
Oh, wow.
Oh, well, yeah, they're on tour together, right? Are they coming through California now? Oh, cool.
And Nebraska.
No, Wisconsin, but it's fine. Wisconsin? You can start naming states. Eventually, you'll hit it. Being from California, people don't, like, people don't even understand where Wisconsin is. Is that near Ohio? No, not really. There's a few states in between. Like, but... Yeah. But I'm excited to see him. I mean, Dwayne's one of my favorite players. He's literally the only person I've ever taken a guitar lesson from. And it was like at the
age amazing.
Of 42 or something along those lines.
He's amazing.
Great player. Great fella. And
You know that today is David Yao's birthday?
Oh, is it really? Oh,
yeah.
I said send him a message. I did not know that. If I either didn't know it or I forgot it. One or the other. Amounts to the same, really. I was thinking about that because I was revisited the ensemble stuff a little while ago, which is like, this is cool. This is a cool record. It's kind of weird that, I feel like it's almost everyone has done so many things that are cool that like it kind of gets forgotten about with the rest of them, right? And that's the burden of being such a genius, I suppose, is that. it's not in the conversation. But I like
yeah,
that.
We asked J.G. Thirlwell, Fetus, asked him, Jim, what does the G in your name stand for? He goes, genius.
What a guy. You know what? That's a guy I should have on this show, and I've never even explored that. I never even thought of that. But, I mean, yeah, from that alone, it's like he's got to come on, right? He's got to.
He's great.
Yeah. What a character. When's, man, I don't want to get into the whole situation we have going on in the U.S., but when do you think there's any chance we're going to see you coming to the U.S.? Maybe if things change this November, hopefully, one can imagine society doesn't collapse.
Well, the problem is the main problem is, the visa costs have gone up so high.
It's so much now.
I mean, if we counted, we were trying to get to tour together, and a week and a half would have cost us about 10,000 euros.
Yeah.
We're like, we can't afford that. So we kind of hope that if things change, we hope that things change, and that when they do change, they change those visa costs for artists, because nobody can come over anymore. It's just too expensive.
It's daunting.
Terrible. It's sad. And it makes us really sad because we love playing in the States, because the American audiences are just the best. I mean, they really are. You know, you really feel that they love and they understand music. And it's really special, touring there, or for you, it's here. and it's sad. It makes a lot of people sad in Europe that... we have friends in England. They're like, there's no way we can play in the U.S. I mean, the cost they have to pay from the U.K. as musicians, it's just insane. So it's like, everybody's kind of sad about that. So we hope that gets changed in the future very quickly.
Yeah. Ever since I started traveling to the U.S., which was my first trip there was in 82, I have been to the U.S. at least once, if not every other year. Like touring with bands or staying in the U.S. between tours with different bands and stuff like that. And since Danielle and I have been together, we would spend every New Year's Eve or Christmas in the U.S. and do these, like annual trips. And I had a working visa for many, many years. And now I haven't been there since 2018.
Oh my God!
This is the first time
since you're 14, I think, that you haven't been.
So the longest time ever that I haven't been there, and it feels very strange because I really used to love the place, but right now I'm so scared. I'm actually, I pride myself with saying like I'm not scared of anything, but I don't feel comfortable going to the States right now, and I'm very sorry to say that. Makes me sad.
I don't feel comfortable living in the States right now. I mean, it's embarrassing. It's horrific. The worst elements of this country have not only been emboldened but overrepresented in the most horrific and inescapable ways that have caused real material interest issues with the disenfranchised and the people that have the most to lose and the least ability to fight any of it. And it's the antithesis of everything I represent, along with most people that operate in our world, and we feel it's like being locked in a prison or something along those lines. And it's hard to find the joy in things. Every day it's hard.
Yeah.
So.
We really feel with you. I mean, you know, everything's bad at the moment. Things in Germany aren't going so great either.
The government
at the moment is horrible. They're cutting all the cultural costs and stuff. It's still okay, but it's going in the wrong direction. So
yeah,
I think we all really need to kind of, you know, work on strengthening good stuff to make it stronger.
That's right.
Against the evil.
A bulwark.
And that's another thing. That's another thing, actually, with our album too. Is in the album, a lot of stuff is hidden, like little symbolic things within the lyrics, within the record cover, within the music. Which for us, it's kind of like secret stuff that gives us strength and positivity, because we try to integrate that in everything we do at the moment to be able to also kind of like. Vibrate that out to our audiences.
Yeah.
We think that's really important. Like, we don't see our music as pure entertainment. We kind of see it more of a kind of energy work in a way that kind of helps us strengthen ourselves and also the people that listen to it and kind of like, I don't know, do it via music, you know, that kind of like resonates in a certain way. So we think everybody has to do it in their own way, you know, obviously. But if everybody does, then we can strengthen the good stuff to vanquish the evil.
And it always exists. There's always helpers. There's always people like creating worlds. I mean, I was thinking about I re-saw that the Desolation Center documentary just recently, which I was like, how cool that there is not only that it happened, but that there's this retelling of it later from, because not in this smartphone era where everything is documented, everybody can be seen. Like, yeah, you can create a space where cool things can happen that are aside from like the world, you know, at the time it had been Reagan's America, right? You know, which seems like a cakewalk compared to what we have now, frankly. But but like, there's, I think we need those narratives. We need those.
I agree.
Stories. Right? To show you what's possible.
Yeah. And to remind you of things too, you know.
100%. 100%. Yeah. And it's fast. And it's something and it's also just hilarious because, you know, last year, we played a bunch of shows with Mike Watt. And he's like, oh yeah, you were at that. I forgot about that. The Minutemen. Oh yeah. I remember that band. Do you have any, how do you feel about that, Alexander? Do you feel about that Desolation Center? Back.
Well, it certainly is a historic document, and
were you jumping on somebody's back who was lying on a bed of nails?
I did a performance with Boyd Rice back in the day when he was sort of still sane, I don't know. But you know, we did this thing. He was lying on a bed of nails, and I broke a stone on his chest with a sledgehammer. It took me 10
so it took sane?
Me, it took me 12 hits to do that. No, but you know, like the whole desert experience, that was something back in, that was in 84, that was something I had never been to a desert in my life.
Sure. Yeah.
Before that, and yeah, lots of great things, and I was very happy that we managed to get my friends from Survival Research Laboratory,
yeah, SRL,
on the show, you know, with their 12 barrel shotgun. You know.
Mark used to be set up next to Tiny Telephone in San Francisco, the studio, and you know, every once in a while, I remember one time we were recording something, and I was like, "What's that noise?" And I was like, "Oh, Mark Pauline's shooting garbage cans out of a cannon."
Back in the 80s, I would always stay. I would always stay with them in San Francisco and in the San Bruno under the underpass mm-hmm. in San Bruno in their workshop. And one time I was there and I was very, very depressed. And they said, like, "Oh, Aka, you know, we're going out. The gun is in the drawer, but please do it outside. Don't make a mess in here." And I checked, there was actually a loaded gun in the drawer. So I could have offed myself, you know. That's their kind of humor.
Yeah, and well, God, Survival Research Laboratories, that is such a great shorthand indicator of old San Francisco, of just like the kind of thing that could happen there that, yeah, I was at the very tail end of that, but I was like, "Oh, this is amazing. This is like where I want to be." You know, I originally came from, you know, I call it the Kansas of California. It was like, you know, there's nothing going on. It's just like John Steinbeck country and casual racism. And, you know, I feel bad that it's a city that technology, anyone that is an artist and still able to live in San Francisco, I mean, good on you. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
But it is nothing like how it used to be. And it's deeply sad. Because there was no city like San Francisco for a very long time. And
yeah.
Now I think they're all becoming these Techlandia states that it's not to my sensibility, let's put it that way. But yeah, Survival Research Laboratories. That's right. I forgot. Because I was like, "Oh, yeah. Like, Pauline's in there. He's got all his crazy devices. We're in the desert. What are we going to hurt?" You know? It's like, yeah, well, I guess you got a good point there.
We have a good friend called Cal Spelitish. I don't know if you know him. He was kind of part of that circle too, but he's still in San Francisco and he does robots and all kinds of weird installations. We did an installation with him here in Berlin, kind of like a choir of singing robots, but like, you know, kind of really rough robots, mechanical ones. And he still survives there. I don't know how he does it, but he still kind of upholds that old San Francisco. He's still there doing it.
I'm glad someone's flying the flag. I mean, I'm, you know, the best I can do is, and we visit once a year to play, you know, usually. And like, then it's like, and it's wonderful, but it's also bittersweet because it's like you see the place that is, but also the place that was at the same time. And you can have kind of reconcile both those feelings at the same time.
There's some institutions and people that are institutions that are still around. I mean, City Lights Bookstore is still there. You know, V Vale of Research Publishing is still there.
One of the most consistent people possible. Like, just like the same person, compliment intended, from the very beginning. Like, what a great person. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. There's... And I suppose it's easy to concentrate on the things that have changed, the institutions that have gone. Bottom of the Hill is going to be gone at the end of the year, which is like, oh, it's like that's such a hit. It's like that's places that you think of as just being formative institutions. But then you look at what has happened around there, like what has come up, and it's like, yeah, this is like the only thing that's left of the old world, so to speak. And it's...
We do have that phenomena here, too, in Berlin. It's nothing like it used to be. You can be certain. I mean, it's still very creative and it's still, still a lot of stuff happening, but you can't really compare it to the way it was when I came here in 1987.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my impression of it was all like Wim Wenders movies and stuff. I'd be like, "Oh, that looks so great." And it's like, yeah, I'm sure
that's in 1980.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Not like that anymore.
No.
Okay, so by the way, it's great having you two back. Sorry, we had a little hassle. It's always a hassle when there's time zones involved, frankly. But I wanted to make sure to get it in while the record was still relatively new. What else should folks know about this record, other than the fact that it's out and they should consider buying a copy?
The limited run of the vinyl that is out right now is in candy colored vinyl, so it looks delicious. Like it was edible. It isn't.
It was Alex's wish.
And
Mute were quite surprised, and he said, "I want our album to be like a pink and orange swirl."
Yes, I want a pink and orange swirl. The swirl didn't quite work out, but it is it is candy colored. It is very, very beautiful.
Saltwater taffy is what it reminds me of. I don't know if you're familiar, familiar with that. Yeah, that's a boardwalk go-to. I'm not a big sweets guy, but I love saltwater taffy. That like the orange saltwater taffy is what it reminds me of.
Exactly.
In a good way. It's a great record. It's very much along the lines of what you've done in the past, but I think there's a lot of things that are very unique about it, not the least of which is the language thing, which we hung on for quite a while. But, love to see you guys play someday. Hopefully we can sort it out in November and we can make that a little easier. We'll see. The xenophobes are unfortunately having a
I'm going to try party. My, you know, my expat vote. I don't know if the envelope will ever you know, get opened, but I'm going to do my best.
Messages
but also,
and bottles.
Like, we just wanted to say that on our Bandcamp page where you can order the album, we also put a link for the U.S., because postal cost costs are so expensive that we're like, there's no way we're going to make people pay like, you know, 60 euros just only for the stamp and then the cost of the LP. So you can go to the link on our page for the U.S. buyers and it'll be sent directly from the Mute office in the U.S., which is
wonderful.
Almost 200% cheaper.
Yeah, I'm amazed.
Yeah, there's one thing I would like to stress, though, and I cannot say this often enough, is that if you are in the lucky position that you still have a record store in your city, mm-hmm. in your town, in your neighborhood, go to that record store and order our record from that store. This way you support the store, and this way it also helps our distributor to know that people want us everywhere and therefore distributes more records to more and more remote places. So that even if there's Bandcamp is a fantastic thing, but still it's more important to support your local record store.
That's we don't want them disappearing.
No, there's too many that have. Stores. And that's something that when we were on tour with Red Cross, Dale is an old friend of mine and is also like me, likes going to record stores, just looking around, like seeing what they have and the encouraging thing is that there's so many of them that are so awesome that are still around and seem to be doing well. The discouraging thing is how many are gone.
Yep.
And
if
you don't support them, that's what happens. And I feel like there's a real understanding of that, you know, in your Austins and your Atlantas and Los Angeles and Nashville and what have you. But I think that people need to understand how much, not just your money, but your attention and interest go towards maintaining this ecosystem that we all exist in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also your community, your neighborhood, you know, just like go to a record store, hang out, you know, like, and that's where it's
meet other weirdos.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it will not surprise either of you that I was a record store guy, years before, I was podcasting or even like touring or playing. And that's like one of the best parts. You get to meet fellow freaks that are into the same weird stuff that you're into. Right. You know, amazing. That's
the best.
The internet can be good for that, but nothing replaces the face to face interaction of hanging out with your people.
True.
Absolutely.
True.
Danielle, Alexander, it's always a pleasure. Sorry it took so long to to make this happen, but we got there, and that's important.
Thank you so much.
The new record's great. I'm going to put it in the show notes so people can pick up a copy. Give it a listen. Spread the word, et cetera, et cetera. What do you got coming up? Anything coming up that people should know about other than this new record that we just spent about an hour talking about?
We've been we're going to do a show here in a couple of weeks commemorating the 65th anniversary. I don't know if you want to call that, but the 65th year that the Berlin or that the German Wall was built. So that's what we're going to do out here. That's on the 13th of August. Then also, if you happen to be in Europe in French-speaking countries, we are involved in a French theater production called Sturpzep, which has been performed, and we are actually in the play.
We wrote the music for the whole play, but we're also performing the music live within the play, and it's really great.
Yes, and
that's great.
And I think and I think that's pretty much it from us.
And it's a really surreal play, and the stage props are amazing, and there's dancing and singing and all kinds of stuff. So we're going to be touring with that until fall or even winter of 2027.
Oh, wonderful.
So if anybody's in France, come and see us. We'd love that.
It's not lost on me that this show does have a very dedicated international audience. So hopefully folks that engage with us, they can go see it. I would love to see that. Sounds great. You know, unfortunately, it probably would have to come to the U.S. for me to see it. And that's probably a little less likely right now. But we're working on it. How about that? We're working on
it.
We're always trying to work to change our material conditions in all things. And politics is just one aspect of it.
Vote.
Please, by all means. Such a pleasure having you guys on. Thank you so much. You know,
likewise.
Safe travels. And I'll see you down the road.
Thank you so much.
See you, Conan.
All right,
have a
Danielle,
nice day.
Alex, take care.
Bye.
There they go. Hackety Pachoto. Great checking in with them. Record's great. Again, hackadipachoto.bandcamp.com. Let's listen to one of the songs off of the new record. This is Zeitenwende.
Oh, sein, wie es einmal war.
All right, there you go. That was Hacky DiPietro with Zeitenwende off of Lichtung. You can get that on hackydiepietro.bandcamp.com.
Can you hear me now?
You can also get it at Mute Records. They're good as well. But you can get the, if you're in Europe, you can get the limited edition candy color vinyl from them or at your local record store. It's a bunch of local record store, people. Like Alexander was saying. There you go.
This thing on.
This has been another episode of Protonic Reversal. Thank you so much for listening to it. You can find the show usually Thursdays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific. Streaming live, YouTube and Twitch. Podcasted later everywhere. But if you like the show and you want to get episodes sooner, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal. We'll gladly achieve that goal. Help keep the lights on in this joint as well, which is also appreciated. There's a lot of stuff coming up with Protonic. So yeah, stay tuned for all that. Blog Dahlia. Michael Hampton of Parliament coming on. Dave Ketching. Come back on. It's going to be a great month, which is great. It's going to be gone for half of it, but it's going to be a great first half of the month anyway. And yeah, stay tuned. NeutronFriends.com, NeutronFriends.bandcamp.com for tour dates.
50,000 watts of power.
Thanks to everyone sharing the episodes around, liking on the various things, subscribing, even leaving a review on your platform choice. That all helps people find the show and discover it. Just a darn nice thing to do, really.
This microphone turns
anything else?
Into electricity.
No, I don't think so. Just stay safe out there, as always.
Can you hear me now?
I catch you later.
Out on Route 128, it's dark and lonely. I got my radio on. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Welcome to my top 10. I'd like to thank our sponsor. But we haven't got a sponsor. Not if you were the last man on earth. She was prepared to prove it. This one goes out to a special girl. There is no special girl! It's the... It's the end of radio! The last announcer plays the last record. The last what? Leaves the transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? Broadcasting if there's no one there to receive. It's the end of radio. As we come to the close of our broadcast day. Radio. Can you hear me now? This had been a real emergency!